Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse. This is where we discuss the latest DevOps news, AWS announcements, Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. It's July 9th, 2025. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse sells AWS reference architectures that get you production ready in just 2 weeks. So if you're interested to learn more about that, just go to cloudposse.com/ services and you'll find more. So how can you maximize today's session? Well, our format is very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. You can join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. cloudposse.com/officehours, where you'll get an invite to the session if you register. So I do have one ask today. If you find anything interesting, share it with your team. It's the best way to spread the knowledge. So with that said, let's just get into the announcements here. Just battling my Windows here. What's going on here? There we go. All right. Like I said, I'm grasping at straws here. There wasn't that much interesting news this past week coming out in the DevOps ecosystem, if you will. Closest things that caught my attention. Now I'm totally into home automation, use a lot of Home Assistant, and I doubled down on two of the wrong technologies, Z-Wave and Zigbee, because after I installed over 100 devices all throughout my house, or 200 if you count Zigbee and Z-Wave, everything goes to matter. So now even IKEA, which is my, I haven't bought that much stuff from them, but they've been keeping Zigbee alive for some time, and now they're going all in on Matter. Sorry, it just felt like a tornado was coming through for a second here. So yeah, let's pull up that one. And this was on the verge, so it's paywall. I couldn't really get too far on it. Anybody using a lot of Matter devices? Anybody else into home automation? Just curious. You know, it's very DevOps adjacent. You know, if you love automating infrastructure, just change the infrastructure with your home and it's the same thing. You're just not using Terraform. All right. Next. Oh, there. Here's that time where Google decides to go blank.
There's also the extent of how what kind of automation. I know some folks go in the DevOps direction, which is you use your Docker images and you have your own little remote services. And then some folks go in the direction of Google Home Assistant everything. So you just talk to your phone to do everything, which I guess is the cloud-based alternative.
I guess it depends, which side of the spectrum you're approaching this from.
Right.
Frenic, I don't know how you say his name. He's a big person in the home assistant community, or Frunk. He talks about this, how like if your day job is racking and stacking servers and approaching things with Terraform and I don't know, Kubernetes and that side of things. You have people that go that route. Just God forbid you try and sell your house to the next owner who's going to try and manage that Raspberry Pi cluster that's running your home automation. I would say, actually, in the last week, I've been feeling like, Crestron and Control4, which are these enterprise solutions for home automation. Now I understand why they still exist. Because their standards just stay standard, because they don't have to innovate because they own the whole ecosystem vertically, versus when you have, hundreds of device manufacturers that want to try and play together, then the standards just keep evolving. And then the smart home becomes kind of obsolete and deprecated, which is kind of weird that your home gets deprecated. If we
And I
actually,
think that happened a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? I think it was one of your announcements with Google Home Thermostat. Well,
Oh
it's
yeah.
deprecated.
Have they deprecated the thermostats now too? Because they deprecated the Nest smoke alarms. Have they deprecated the third? Don't
Yeah,
see the
you won't be able to
question.
use the like mobile apps to update and remotely control them, is my understanding of how that works. Knowing this, because I have two of them that I never use any of that stuff for anyways, but you know, whatever. So
Is killing off software support for the early Nest thermostats interesting? That is.
right, yeah, I think those are from like the 2014 ones, perhaps. There is an argument to be made about 10 years is a long time, but then again, houses last for a
Yeah.
lot longer than 10 years, so.
But God knows, you know, Sonos that makes the speakers, they got all hell broke loose when they said, hey, we're just not going to support this smart speaker anymore, some of the original generation stuff. And yeah, there was a big backlash for that. Google's just so, everyone's now so used to killing things, Google killing things. I guess we just like, oh, okay, what else is new? But that's too bad. Yeah. If they kill this one, this looks like the one I have before they switch to this new form factor.
That's okay.
Google.
I forgive them. They gave a Gemini CLI, so it's all good. So,
I haven't made that switch yet. Are you enjoying Gemini?
yeah, it's pretty good for a million token length count, you know, and
That is
being totally
great.
free. I
That's
mean, it's,
pretty
you know.
insane that, yeah, you get a million token length. No one else comes close. All right, so that was that. In other news, so you know, we have been big proponents of managing the Terraform state backends with Terraform, and it's a little bit messy, the import process to go through that. But in a, something we are exploring as an alternative is a set different IAC approach to managing the backends of Terraform itself. To simplify the cold start. And hear me out. So sometimes when you want to get ahead, you got to phase shift. So like, you know, if you're sailing and you're tacking and you're always tacking at the same time, everyone's tacking, you're never going to get ahead of the other boats. You got to tack ahead at some point and get a better updraft. So in this case, you know, if we're just trying to solve everything with Terraform and taking such a hard line position, maybe we're actually not doing ourselves a service, and we're making things harder on ourselves. For example, TerraGrunt for a very long time has managed the Terraform state backend. Well, maybe I'm having a mea culpa, and that Atmos should do something similar. What I don't like about TerraGrunt managing the backend is that, well, you have minimal control over the design of that. And I guess you could always import that back into Terraform if you wanted to in some point. Well, the thinking here with CloudFormation is there are things with CloudFormation that are very nice. Obviously, this is an AWS-centric approach, and any solution like this would be cloud platform specific. But within AWS, CloudFormation for managing simple things that don't fail are very convenient, and it combines like the automation and the drift detection all in one. So you can have a single document you deploy almost like you can in Kubernetes with a manifest, a single document that you can deploy to Kubernetes, and it just makes it happen. Same is true for CloudFormation. So for something as simple as an S3 backend, maybe Dynamo if you still need it. It's technically not really required in new versions of Terraform and OpenTofu. It's not a bad idea. And the other thing is that the more you are moving in a GitOps direction, and if that for you means GitHub Actions as it does for us, then it's nice if, well, can't we just like treat this as kind of like an axiom? It just exists. And I don't have to worry about that and just move on. So what if we just had a CloudFormation template that created the bucket, created the IAM roles, created the GitHub OIDC integration, so you can just use it now with GitHub Actions, and you could just run that with one command and move on to the rest of your business? Wouldn't that be nice? So that's our idea with this. We created this repository here called AWS CloudFormation Terraform Backend. And it sets up the state backend. It sets up another thing that we use for our solutions, which is a Terraform bucket for storing your plan files. Technically, that's optional. And then we have a metadata table, which stores metadata about the plan files. So this is kind of like a separate thing for GitOps specifically. And then this is the state backend for Terraform itself with an optional DynamoDB table. And then the GitHub Actions solution for getting that working with OIDC. So you can run one command to deploy this stack, and now you have everything you need to run Terraform on AWS and integrate it with your GitHub Actions so that everything from there on can just be GitOps. Thoughts on that? Anybody doing this already?
We're doing something similar. So I guess my question is, for why CloudFormation? Is it so that you have the flexibility to deprovision it afterwards at some point?
Yeah, so it's still defined as code. You can have
Right.
all the same policies there. It's not CLI driven. When you do CLI ops, there's no record of what was ever run. And also this is pretty magical. Look, you can just click this button and deploy this in your account. One click deployment of everything you need there. So depending on who your audience is or how simple you're trying to go, I think it's kind of nice. And just like we are polyglots in every other area of development, why not be semi-polyglottic, if that's a word, when it comes to IAC? So solutions around that.
Gotcha.
The other thing I'm thinking about is how like Atmos has the support for different component types. It would be very nice if Atmos could just do CloudFormation natively, and then this could just be a source that Atmos could deploy. And now Atmos can very conveniently deploy the backend that's managed automatically with CloudFormation, and then the rest of everything works with Terraform.
Gotcha.
Would you see this in use in, say, like a control tower situation where they're managing Well, so many dozens of accounts or? there's so many different scenarios, right? So control tower can also automatically provision your CloudFormation templates. So that's another use case for it. I see, similar to that, in each account where you want to operate in a simpler model. Well, so what we've been practicing for a very long time at Cloud Posse is a centralized Terraform state backend. Prior to that, we deployed a backend in each account, but we stepped back from that for a little while because we, at least at the time, we felt like it didn't add much value and had a cold start problem where we'll. You can't deploy anything in the account until you have the back end, and then you had to create the back end in the account, and that got messy. So I think this is now we're coming around back to this idea so that the state associated with an account is in the account itself, which makes some of the permissions modeling easier. This is one of those ideas is using CloudFormation for that. This CloudFormation, to your point, Zach, could be managed through the account factories and CloudFormation and Control Tower. It can also be used as that one-click install. It can, conceivably be used directly in Atmos to provision it that way, or you can just use it as a standalone, or you don't have to use it at all. You could use our existing component. That we have, depending on how you want to manage backends. But we have, under our Cloud Posse Terraform components, we have our TF state component, which is the backend that we use predominantly in our reference architecture today. And this does that with Terraform. So, a long-winded way of saying yes, depending on what you want to optimize for. We don't use Control Tower. At this time, we use just native Terraform to manage organizations, OUs, SCPs, AWS config rules, all of that stuff in native Terraform.
Multiple accounts too. I mean, how are you doing
Yeah.
that?
Oh, we use Terraform to provision the accounts themselves. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you go to our Terraform components, we have a component called account named.
Avoid the whole landing page thing altogether.
Yeah, exactly. For some reason, it's not the top result here. I would guess it's AWS account. There it is. So this is the AWS account component that will provision all of your accounts and OUs. Here you can see what the configuration of that looks like. So
Gotcha.
it's a Terraform native way of doing it, so you don't need to use Control Tower. If you've ever looked at how like account factories for Terraform looks like with Control Tower,
That's scary.
yeah. If it takes you more than 25 minutes to explain how it works, you know your solution's a little bit complicated.
Yeah, it's very scary. I helped build some of that.
I'm sorry.
You get full blame then.
Yeah, all right. Everyone, I think that was Zoe who said that.
Yep, just blame me.
So, all right. Next announcement was, let's see here. Yeah, so Atmos uses GoYAML as the Go library to parse all the YAML configs. Now, there are honestly some one nicer alternative now that we would like to move to. However, as you might have heard, the GoYAML package, the maintainer made the difficult choice and actually said that he's stepping away from the project. He didn't have time to work on it anymore. And this was that classic situation. You've seen those diagrams before, like the whole internet survives on this one package managed by this one guy in like Montana or something. Well, that was this kind of scenario where all of these major projects depended on GoYAML, and the guy who backs it was stepping away from it. Well, the YAML Foundation, or whatever you can call it, the YAML project, I don't know if there's a official foundation behind it, has adopted that project, and there's now an official fork for this that is maintained and is getting updates, as you can see here. So that's nice because the project was more didn't have a new release in over a year or two in the previous project. And yes, we will be updating Atmos to point to this soon. Next announcement was something Matt on our team shared, which was that Figma has filed for their IPO. And one of the interesting things to come out of that is, well, what the revenue is. So they're currently generating $750 million a year in revenue. And they're spending $110 million of that to Amazon. So that's almost $300,000 a day. Next up is.
Well, was it a few office hours ago? I think you'd mentioned there was one of these similar documents where they released Datadog was spending ridiculous.
That was Coinbase was the one.
Coinbase.
Yeah. And I mean, this was just for some reason this was trending. This trends like every few months on Hacker News, and I just saw it like last week again trending there. So it's a little bit old news, but yeah, it was reviewed. This was and they came out and said later on why that was. Like, look, they were just admittedly making money hand over fist. The valuation of Bitcoin was just constantly going up and to the right. And they had just too many things going on with too lean of a team, so they were in a vulnerable position from a pricing negotiation standpoint, and they just paid it. So yeah, I think they had a what was it, $65 million Datadog bill.
Jeez.
So.
And then you see all their sales and account executives reaching out on LinkedIn. It's like, yeah, all right, okay, calm down.
Yeah. I'd be really curious if their bill is anywhere near that anymore. And if it is, power to those account reps at Datadog for keeping the hope alive. So the next thing I thought was really interesting in a few ways. There's both on the surface what this is. The ability for content creators, content owners to now have a way of charging for their content. And the precedent that this sets in other areas, and we'll get to that after this. So what is this? So Cloudflare has taken advantage of a seldom used HTTP status code 402. And if you do not have a contractual relationship with one of these content creators that is using this feature, you will get a 402 when trying to crawl that, which is basically your request was denied. And another way of thinking about this is Cloudflare is almost like Spotify for content creators. Like Spotify helps manage routing of royalty payments to the creators of music, so that you can make it easy to listen to. This is doing that for content, presumably used by AI crawlers to train the AI models. You could imagine Stack Exchange or Stack Overflow being a perfect use case for this kind of technology. So this is not an open standard, so it's this is something custom that Cloudflare has created, and it's currently in a private beta, so I don't believe you can just go and flip a switch yet on Cloudflare and turn this on. And there are two parts to this. There's one, as a company doing the crawling, you have to set up your account with Cloudflare, and how you transact on that. It's opaque right now. I don't know how that works. And then, as a content owner or creator, you can then enable this, provided your site has Cloudflare. And this ties into Cloudflare's bot protection that it already has. So this is just like extending that. So instead of just flat out rejecting them, well, if they're going to pay for it, sure, crawl. And I don't know that this benefits Cloud Posse per se. There's so many places we can take this. I would personally like AI to crawl our open source and use that, provided it also recommends that people use our open source as they're vibe coding their infrastructure. That'd be great. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting about this, and I think we talked about it before, I think it was on a call where Matt Gowey was on, was how can we create a financial model that supports open source Terraform providers, modules, stuff like that. The idea that we came up with at that time was, what if there was like a pay to crawl, pay to init registry in Terraform, where it was like usage based in some way, right? So it's 1 cent per 100 initializations or something. I don't know. That's probably not going to move the needle or anything, but some way where it's inconsequential in the great grander scheme of things, but a way that usage-based consumption of Terraform modules could be compensated. And that's kind of what this is a precedent for that we're seeing here. Any thoughts on this? Any other perspectives or insights?
I don't know if you're able to remember, but you know how we have NPM Fund, which is a command, and that came about almost as a direct correlation to some developer, those one of those core developers who's holding the internet together, changed their package to basically spam the console with, "Hey, I'm unemployed, donate to me, hire me." So developers around the world, when they updated their packages, would be getting spammed by it. And it was massive. It was obtuse. There was just ASCII art and everything. And NPM naturally forced them to revert the change and then introduced NPM Fund so developers can go about it through a proper way. And that's kind of what this reminds me of, is this is going to be push and pull on balancing it out. This clearly makes sense and you're producing content, so you should be compensated. But how do you balance that to be as fair as possible, I guess?
Yeah, exactly.
I question whether people like us are the target audience. There's just such a huge ad revenue based part of the internet that is probably the audience for all of this. They're the people that are, there's a chilling effect. If all your stuff is getting taken and nothing's getting redirected back to your site where you get your revenue, it it affects industries, right? So I'm imagining that's what's going on here. So.
Yeah. Well, I saw you going one way and then you went another. So I was a little unprepared, but who is this targeting is what I heard you leading with. And it
I
isn't
just, yeah.
obviously, anybody on this call, but it is the Googles, the Open AIs, the Anthropics of the world who are indexing content at a voracious clip and trying to make that
Well, and they
make.
skip the sites directly. They just give people the results. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's the end result of having already consumed the content, then they're able to do exactly what you're saying, just summarize it, right? So, yeah, and if that happens without any compensation at the crawling stage, then that's problematic. And that's probably what you were leading with. Or am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I mean, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, they can have all my content. I've got a decade's worth of blog entries. Now that I can have OpenAI write blog entries in the voice of Zachary Lover, and it works. It's so crazy. So, but I'm not making money off that stuff. I'm just blathering out to the
Have you
ether,
done that,
So,
Zach? Have you done that?
yeah, I have. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I'm like, it's still crappy, but it's not.
It's
It's
funny.
sort of as idiotic as I sound. So.
Pretty cool though. I haven't
I
tried.
mean,
I haven't tried saying that. Say this in the voice of Eric Ostrom. I don't know if I have enough
you
content out there, unless it's indexing YouTube. Then I have 6 years of weekly videos. I'm ripe for impersonation. All right. So let's see. Last announcement, I think. Or no, that was the last one. Anybody else got something interesting? Oh wow, there were a bunch of things going on in the Zoom chat here. I was not paying attention. So what do we have here? All right, looks like it was a lot of the conversation back with the Terraform state backends.
For what it's worth, our approach has been super caveman-y in as much as we have a GitHub action that has basically CLI commands in it, and we trigger it with workflow dispatch with a couple of inputs, things like what region do you want it in? Do you want to have like a prefix it with a string so you can identify it easily? And it's a weird one, and I think the person in the chat, Ben Smith, hit the nail on the head with it's a little bit of security through obscurity. Because it's not in infra, it's not in code. Once you trigger the script, it runs. We have a log of it because it's a GitHub Action script, but you can't delete it accidentally. It doesn't exist in a way that you can change it again. Of course, the con of that is you can't change it, you can't tag it, you can't do anything with it afterwards.
Yeah, or manipulate or manage it. So all you need to do is now change your script to call the AWS CloudFormation deploy command with our template
That's
in your set.
It's CloudFormation. We've been avoiding it for the longest part just because it's very much a HashiCorp house and we all write Terraform. But for
Yeah.
things like this, it kind of seems like the most sensible option going for CloudFormation, especially if you're on AWS already.
Yeah, and this stuff happens. Like, even if you deploy some services with AWS, some of those AWS services create other resources, and those resources aren't managed with Terraform. Or you deploy an EKS cluster and that provisions a load balancer, and half the resources associated with that are also not, really, even in Kubernetes as individual resources are managed by the controller in relation to some resource. So there are all these other gray areas, and I think this diehard stance that we've fallen into at points about like it's got to be Terraform have not. Don't serve the end user in the end. They serve a like I'm trying to think of like they serve a a IAC religion, if you will, of how things go. But that's too dogmatic, and we want to make it in the service of the end user.
If it was a code review, it would be a nitpick, and it shouldn't concern the customer what we choose.
Yeah. And then there's still a problem with what I heard there, or like there's still a catch 22, and I guess there are different phases here, but The catch 22 in what you described, you've already enabled a GitHub Action workflow, presumably with GitHub OIDC, and that needed to be done at some point. So, what I like about this approach that we've taken here is that it's also in the same life cycle, and the permission scope is the same, if you will. So, at the time the bucket is created, the OIDC is created, and those two things are tightly linked. And if you need a different repo, well, then give it a different bucket with its own OIDC integration, and don't share the OIDC integration or configuration there, et cetera, or the bucket. So I like this model. And I guess if the improvement here would be is if there was some magical way when a repo is created, this CloudFormation would also run to create a backend for that infrastructure repository. But that's a catch 22. And I know it could be done with Lambda, so don't tell me.
I was going to say that that's actually, do you happen to do blogs on Cloud Posse? Because this seems like a very clickbaity title, but solving the Terraform chicken and egg problem, this seems like the solution to it.
It is a it's but it's not it, it's a it's not we're not a novel or original in it, if you will. I think a lot of people have come to similar conclusions at different times. Yeah, it is worthy of a post, I think. Thanks, Rashad. Actually, one of our office hours listeners, Mike, or he's been around, Mike Van Brusick. He has a post on this as well. Mike Van Brusick, I don't know how you spell it. And my keyboard isn't working.
That's super rare to get 0 results on Google. Gotta go really hard.
Yeah, I must have. Oh, here it is. This is a similar inspired
Ooh.
post. So,
Ooh, you know it's a serious blog when it's monospaced.
exactly. So, he's also a good content writer, by the way. So, if your
Oh,
company's
definitely.
looking for content, he's available as a ghostwriter. All right. What else can we talk about today? Let's see here. This is. Oh no, I thought it was in the office hours channel of somewhere else.
Well, I'm going to jump in if nobody's going to
Go
fill
for it.
that space, and I happen to be on the chat.
I think I'm going to add a segment specifically for the Michael Jenkins segment.
Hey, huh.
If you like that, I'll pencil it in.
I'll keep you posted.
Did you ever watch 60 Minutes and at the end there's Andy Rooney? You know, that's
Yes. Hey, maybe I could fill that slot for the Cloud Posse show.
exactly.
But yeah, so this week, I'm looking at a session. I forget who's doing the session. It's coming up in a few weeks or whatever. But it's basically talking about Gen AI in DevOps, and I'm still kind of, scratching my head on the best use case for Gen AI in DevOps outside of generating the code itself that we would use for creating infrastructure, creating scripts, wherever the case is, and perhaps on the flip side of that, analyzing logs that come out of the services that we run, maybe finding errors, debugging errors, that type of thing. Yeah, I just wanted to bounce off the folks here and maybe the Cloud Posse team, like, what's your use case for Gen AI so far? Are you vibe coding? What types of apps or stuff are you vibe coding? Just like, what are you using Gen AI for today?
Yeah. Well, let's take a step back and think about it in terms of other languages and frameworks, and then let's apply that thought process to IAC and Terraform, for example. So, vibing has been incredibly effective in, especially, let's say, the JavaScript ecosystem, Node.js ecosystem, especially when you're working with a framework like Next.js. because there's so many established conventions that it can follow, and there's so much prior art that it can follow. So there's varying degrees of how you vibe with that. At some point, there's creating your component library that is reusable. But then once you have that, hopefully most of your site is just recomposing those components in different ways to convey or communicate what you're trying to do. And if extensive code review at least goes into development of the components, subsequent use of those is already compliant with kind of your design and how you approach content on your site. So I think that it's effective both in creating the components, but that's something that you do more less frequently. And then composing them is something you do more frequently, but that's a lot easier to do. So before I move on, does that conceptual model make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Yeah.
So I think the key there is a framework. And a framework is what adds the consistency that makes it not a free-for-all. And I think one of the problems with how many companies approach Terraform is that it's not framework driven. It's a free-for-all driven approach. Because they're just, it's like if you went vibe coding and just said, hey, give me JavaScript to create this website, but don't use Next.js, don't use any, React framework, just like don't use jQuery, just do this raw. And that is how a lot of companies will end up vibe coding their IAC. How can we improve that? Well, let's take the same layered approach. First, let's identify a module ecosystem that you trust and want to use. Obviously, Cloud Posse is one of those for AWS. There's Terraform AWS modules, and to a lesser degree, some of the other cloud providers have it too. There's the Google Cloud Platform organization. So maybe through some agent instructions, when you design your components, it is going to build it on those modules. And why is that nice? Well, it's not a free-for-all then. At least the code contained in that module is up to par, has been reviewed, is hopefully tested, like if you're using our modules, and you're better off. Now, when you create that component, and remember, components are reusable and opinionated, and they shouldn't be so opinionated you can only ever use it once. But they shouldn't be so generic that you have to spend this much code and configuration to use it. So somewhere in between them. So as an organization, you want to be focused on creating your component library. Well, that's what like, I'll be, this is, obviously a pitch for Cloud Posse, but I'm sharing our strategy and why I think it's really effective in the Gen AI era. So here are our components, just like in the Next.js ecosystem or the React ecosystem. So these are proven to do one thing very well. They have automated tests, many of them. They have been, developed by us and so forth. Now, in the future, does that mean these won't be more and more vibe coded? Yeah, probably. But the idea is to create reusable building blocks and not to start from scratch every time. Have any of you tried to use generative image creation on like OpenAI? Now there are much better systems than OpenAI, but OpenAI is one that's accessible at least to me. And I think you know where I'm going with this. It's incredibly frustrating because you'll have it like, hey, create this image and it's almost perfect. And then now, okay, it's perfect. Don't change a thing. Just move the badge from here to there, like from one side to the other side. And then it like changes the color, the design, the background, and everything, even though you told it not to do any of those things. And that is what it's like if you're trying to use Gen AI on infrastructure from scratch. But it's not how it's like if you're taking this layered approach where the degree of variation or freedom is reduced by using the components and the modules. It's just the degree of variation of the inputs to those. So now you have your components. What is the last thing missing? A framework. So a framework is how you consistently use your components. It's how you consistently invoke the commands to create that. Like it's like npm run, right? Or when you're using Atmos, which is our framework for Terraform, it's running Atmos, Terraform, and Plan, or Atmos, Terraform, Apply. But that's respecting configuration that's been set up within the stacks. And that is this framework that we have. So now you can use agentic AI to create your stacks that invoke your components. And each layer of this has been vetted at different times. And each layer has tests at different stages. So now you're creating stable AI generatively through AI. And I think that's what works.
Yeah, I can totally dig it. And I mean, I do appreciate the comparison to, or not the comparison, but the call out to non-determinism in AI, starting from scratch, you mentioned. Like it's definitely visible in images, but if you're at a project, you're starting a project, and every time you say, hey, give me this environment or this build out VPC database, couple stacks, whatever the case is, you're going to get something different every time. But if you say, hey, AI agent, whatever you are, this is the library of stuff. These are your Legos. Build this, use this stuff to build what I need. And oh, by the way, here's this tool that you can kind of use to wrap around whatever you're doing. So I can dig that approach. I wonder, like, for the wider audience of our peers or whatever, if they will be able to tap into that. I mean, I would hope that a lot of people are using components. I know people are still developing what I call artisanal Terraform because
I like it, artisanal
every bit is like perfectly crafted for what they need, but I think that's a good place to start with the component. You can vibe out a component and then based on your component library, vibe out the environment, the architecture that you need.
No, and you called it, and I take personal responsibility for this, that we haven't done a better job posting weekly posts to Medium, educating everybody on why you should be doing all these things. We're so busy building things and working on our reference architecture that we are less busy on promoting the best practices. And then as a result, we get lots of Medium posts promoting things that aren't going to get people to where they need. This idea that there's no framework for Terraform is something I think we are really trying to beat the drum on, and that's what we've created. I think that's why there's so much problem in the Terraform ecosystem, is that everybody's just like writing like PHP without a framework, Python and just pure Python. Nobody does that. But Terraform, no, we don't want to add complexity. It's so the term drives me nuts when people say we don't want to add complexity. Okay, so you're just gonna add crap. Your choice, crap or complexity. Pick your
Yeah,
poison.
sounds about right.
So, hey
But yeah, I
Ben,
would say
I saw you had your
Matt
hand up
Galloway's the
earlier.
champion for educating us, evangelizing proper use of
Yeah.
the system. So I'll shout out to him too.
Yeah, big shout out to Masterpoint and Matt Galloway. They do a great job on that. And I endorse a lot of what he says. So he was also, I don't know, I think it was maybe in a post this past week that I saw Matt Galloway responded to. And I think the person was saying that Matt Galloway had said something about generative AI and Terraform. And then Matt Galloway was saying, no, I don't think that was me, but if I were, then here's what it is. And okay, that was not a clear explanation. My point was, I think there's a point where like components will be vibe coded, if you will. But that is that, like I was saying, that should be a cold start thing. That is when you are building your platform, when you're creating like the tooling that you as a company are going to use, yes, that is cool. Review it and then keep reusing that instead of always starting from scratch, right? So that is the idea with componentization. All right. Anything else any other interesting thoughts, Michael, or anyone else?
Well, I hate to let dead air, go to waste, then you go to. So I mean, just following up on that. So have you considered sort of like a, and I don't know how expensive this would be considering the cost of tokens and the back and forth talking to models and whatnot, but a model that understands Atmos and understands your component library, so you can ask it to say, hey, agent. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at now is like a framework that kind of does what we just discussed.
No, absolutely. And I think if we were venture backed, we'd already be there out of pressure from our investors. But it is something we have to pursue a little bit here and there on the side. That's why I was excited about another thing that came up. Was it you who shared it? Context 7, which is the next best thing. So they've created a system that kind of creates the LLMs.txt for projects, and somebody submitted that for Atmos. So here is a kind of updated LLMs TXT for Atmos that you can then plug into Cursor, Copilot, etc. I believe they also provide an MCP. So if you use the Context 7 MCP, then it can automatically use those LLM TXTs.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, I don't think I shared that one, but I will definitely be taking a look at it.
And it was posted in the Atmos. Let's see if I can find it. Where was it? Might not have been in a public channel. Yeah, here it was in the Atmos channel. Yeah, so I posted this back in May. And then Yang, who is on Matt's team at Masterpoint, said he used it for a bunch of existing Atmos code base to create a new Greenfield Atmos project. It worked surprisingly well and better than expected, exactly how he wanted it, even better, since it had documentation to use things that he hadn't previously knew even existed, right? So yeah, that was exciting to hear.
This is great, and it's got me thinking. I remember this conversation started with workflows which debug any failure and it gives you an output. This seems like a perfect kind of step in for, hey, here's the error message, and here's the context for the message I'm
Good
now
call.
figured out.
Yeah. So your GitHub action should be augmented with support for MCPs.
Yeah, that was neat. Also, do you have any idea why it's context 7? Does the 7 have any?
No, I keep on like, oh, layer 7, layer 7. But no, it's not layer 7. It's so I don't know what, there's a company behind it. Let's
Oh,
see.
it's powered by Upstash.
That's what it was,
That's really neat. Huh. And I guess if you have a big enough library, big enough framework, you just trigger an update on this every time you change your documentation.